All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. My co-host is Sandy Williams. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You know, Sandy, I was going to move on from the conversation we had before we went to break, but I don't think we've exhausted it yet because I was asking you, you know, these people who've gone all in for Donald Trump, and one man, you know, not for the United States government, they haven't gone in for the very nation that they claim to pledge allegiance to, you know, and that flag that they walk around with and ownership of the flag, they've given their allegiance to this man. And so what happens to people when they've given it all in for one guy, not for their nation, and then that guy goes off the scene, which Donald Trump is going to do eventually, what happens to those people then? They're fractured, they're fragile.
Well, I mean, I think and I probably always underestimated it, this notion of the peaceful transfer of power, which we've talked about as being so fundamental to the long-term, the longevity of the American democracy, it really is vital because absent the peaceful transfer of power from one power center to another, you end up with what we're getting right now. I mean, Donald Trump would not participate in a peaceful transfer of power. He did everything to continue to carry his backers with him in an effort to fight not against just his opponent but against the government. As the government was transferred to Joe Biden, Donald Trump began to take on the government at large as being illegitimate, just the way he was attacking it as he ran for government. He talked about how America was in demise, and basically when he was running in 2016, he ran against the government. And I think, first of all, we have to ask ourselves, why can a personality like Donald Trump seize so many hearts and minds? And I think you have to look at it and say those hearts and minds were vulnerable because many of them were already disaffected from the government from the 30-year or 40-year onslaught, starting with Reagan, working through Newt Gingrich, the Contract for America. The rest of it was all about taking on government, defunding the government, right? The Norquist pledge.
Grover Norquist,
Grover
right.
Norquist was all about
no
new taxes, but implicit in all of that and the Republican attack was to defund the, particularly the government agencies that were so inconvenient and difficult to deal with. So we have an American public that was vulnerable to this. I think mankind generally is vulnerable to being lumped into sort of a sheeple kind of a herd. We've always had a herd instinct. And there are individuals who come along like Donald Trump who can seize that impulse and can lead it. And it's very important that those people, those leaders, put the government and put the country ahead of themselves to participate in this peaceful transfer of power in which they, and a peaceful transfer of power doesn't just mean that they go to the inauguration and put their hand over their heart while it happens. It means that after the power is transferred, they honor that transfer and they continue to honor the power of the government that has been transferred to somebody else. Donald Trump has not done that. And he has continued to take the people who follow him in this quest against the government. So he has refused to honor what is most fundamentally important to the longevity of our democracy, which is the peaceful transfer of power. Back in the day when places that weren't democracies, for Napoleon. Napoleon was sent into an exile on the Isle of Elba because it was necessary to remove him from a position back then where there wasn't social media, from the position where he could whip up his followers and bring them back to Paris. There has always been a knowledge that there was a need to exile the prior leaders to move them out of the country so that there could be a peaceful transfer of power. And in the United States, we never had that. We never had that going on because we never had anyone quite like Donald Trump who continued to beat the drum.
So, Sandy, the very thing that supposedly separated our nation from all the other nations, over all of these decades was the fact that we were immune to dictatorship, unlike many other nations, because of the way our Constitution and everything else was set up. Are we now in danger?
Well, of course we are, because, you know, the Constitution and our government is fragile. And, you know, people have always said that. I've spent decades hearing it, never really believing it, and now we can look and watch and realize that it is frayed, and it is frayed almost to the point of disrepair, you know, and can we repair it? And that's what we need to work on, and everyone ought to realize that we are at a very serious moment where we could lose a grip on what has historically been the American government, and we could move to something else. We have 19 states who are talking about
separating.
Well, they're talking about a constitutional convention,
right,
to change the very Constitution that constitutionalists, conservatives, have always pointed at and said, that's the bedrock, that's the jewel, that's the ruby, we must protect it. Now they're talking about amending it. Well, what do they want to amend it to exactly?
They want to amend it to them staying in power.
Well, yeah, and a bunch of, they don't believe that Constitution is conservative enough. Well, I'll tell you, so there are some pretty conservative constitutions around. Most of them are in autocratic countries.
You know, Sandy, so you look at this, and the only way this can be stopped is each American themselves take a look at themselves and say, is this what I'm following, what I'm believing? Is it going to have a impact on our nation long term? Is it going to be a positive impact? They've got to look in the mirror, right? And they've got it themselves as an individual. So I'm supporting this. What is going to be the outcome? What do I want to really happen here?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, they've got to think this through, Sandy. We're at a point, a dangerous point, which is what we're trying to make to our listening audience, that we shouldn't dismiss this as just, you know, folly. I mean, the nation is in a serious time.
Well, and that's why I think rather than having any sort of a combative call, I'm really eager to have conservative callers call in, because I'm trying to understand what's going on in their minds with respect to what this current political impulse could do to the American democracy. I'm not worried about conservative liberal at this point.
Right.
I'm worried about the country.
So let's go to Bill from McCunnum Walk. Hey, Bill, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
I love your topic. I believe there's a couple of key things that we have to do to bring democracy back. Number one, we have to repeal Citizens United. The mere title of that, Citizens United, shows you what a misleading bill that was. That allowed Donald Trump to get in position. Sandy mentioned before about Newt Gingrich. Yeah, his declaration of war on politics was part of it, going back to Reagan and all that, big government, all of that. But Citizens United allowed for America to have their president bought and paid for. It really did. But I'm asking, I'm not telling. I want to hear your thoughts. I'll hang up and thanks both of you. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Sandy.
Well, Citizens United, a lawsuit, you know, that's the problem with today's legislation, and also the interest groups that bring lawsuits. They always have a euphemistic name for themselves that kind of is wrapped in the American flag, but maybe not necessarily. So Citizens United, this group that brought the action on behalf of corporate money in politics, and that has had a huge impact. And you had a guest on last week,
right,
spoke to this, and Bill's obviously right. But, you know, it's money in politics is a fundamental issue, but it's even more fundamental than that. Because I don't think, to be honest with you, money didn't bring us Donald Trump. I think the cynicism about government has in many respects been created by money in government. And so that there are so many Tom, Dick, and Marys out there who feel like government isn't representing them, because you know what? Maybe it isn't because of money and politics. So this disaffection from government has probably been brought to us by money and government. And it was Donald Trump who used his kind of Barnum and Bailey instincts to seize on that feeling and to unite people in as backing him as the symbol of somebody who was going to take on this government machine and change it.
So, Sandy, it's not like I don't understand why, you know, there are people who feel the way they feel in rural areas and other places because of the loss of their jobs, you know. And as one of those people who basically lost my job because of NAFTA, and what took place, and saw, you know, the global implications of what wound up, you know, taking these jobs out of the country. I understand that, but when you look at that, and people have basically used that as the premise for being angry and not getting over it. And so they're willing to do all these other things and blame everything and everybody else. At some point in time, you have to get beyond that, right? And so their anger of what took place with industry leaving this nation and moving to different places, that happened, right? And it's not coming back. And then you've got to move on. And
but I do understand that our government is not formulated in a way that has provided maybe comfort or solutions to those people for the problem.
I was one of those people.
I know. And if you'd been one of those people in Germany, you would have been quickly moved into a retraining.
Right.
And so there was, I'm just saying that there are government services provided in other countries that do a better job of dealing with the misfortunes that are dealt to people in the context of a market economy. Market economies have a magical way of making the choices for what gets made and what doesn't get made and where it doesn't get made. That's very effective, but it's a sterile scalpel that operates in a manner that can cause harm to people unless there is a safety net that's there to provide them safety that allows them to participate in the market economy in a successful way and makes the market economy more successful. We have a market economy environment in the United States, which is very good. That's a good thing. But we haven't provided the net under that market economy that allows the, first of all, we're seeing now the problems created by the lack of a training safety net.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Muskego to Pewaukee. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Funky. Heard about the party now. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And I'm sorry for not moving on, but I think the conversation is so important with Sandy about this. And the time is so critical. And so this divide in the nation at this point in time really has to be addressed in a manner commensurate with the future of this nation. And that's what's at stake, Sandy. Let's make no mistake about it. Before we went to break, they're talking about the fact that people still angry because these jobs were taken out of the country. And so, you know, the people who still feel that way, the jobs have long since gone. Their lives have been altered and changed, true enough. But wallowing in it, it's not going to change anything, right? You're not going to make the global reality of what's happening in the world change. We're not going back to a time even though Donald Trump says America first, we're not going to go back to America first. What, you know, what is America first? You know, people have to ask the question, Sandy, what is that? Well, you know, we're going to do everything inside of our borders, and we're going to take care of the American people and the rest of the people of the world. That's cavalier in his thought. Well, but what is that?
Well, you know, but the progressive movement is in a way the same. It's the same thing. Let's the Tom who calls and says the people are the government.
Tom is on the line. But
yeah,
go ahead.
So we want to, you know, there is a strong movement in the country. And I think to some extent, I was skeptical of this at the time of the Biden election. But I think I now see that it is true that the progressive movement is in some respects responsive to the same undercurrent of problem in the United States that the conservative movement is responsive to, which is they want to change things and shake things up from what they are. Well, no, because the current government has failed to represent their interests. And the current government is this money and politics thing. So I think Tom is right. I think we've reached that agreement a month ago, maybe, that money and government might be the fundamental issue that has caused this disconnect between the current government and large portions of the American public. The progressive movement does not like the current government the way it is. Not that they want to change it constitutionally, but they definitely want to change its political cast and the kinds of laws that are passed by the legislature. And the conservatives are much more proactive. They want to change the very government itself. But so we have this unhappy discord that needs to get solved. And maybe one way to get it going would be to get a unity, a movement to remove money from politics. But I'm afraid that the fraying of our fabric, we need Donald Trump to wake up tomorrow morning with responsibility and dedication and patriotism in his heart. I don't think it's going to happen because I don't think he's capable of it. But here is a man who has seized a hold of the minds and hearts of a substantial number of frightened people, millions, tens of millions of people. And if he's going to continue to act irresponsibly, then we are going to have a serious problem.
Let's go to the phone lines. And Tom, hey, Tom, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hey, Earl, first off, we the people are ultimately the government. The Republican Party is the pro-murder and pro-death party. What I want to say is that, yes, it's all about money and politics. It's all about money and media. Sandy was talking about the fact that, you know, in the presidential election with Hillary Clinton, do you know how much free media today that Donald Trump gets in terms of name recognition even? I mean, it is unbelievable how much money this
man,
guy
every one of these, every one of these, you know, sites that I go to, Donald Trump's picture is over all of them, and he's kind of, you know, the ringmaster of from the Washington Post and New York Times. Donald Trump's everywhere.
Right, and I would agree with Sandy in terms of, Sandy, you should ask that question when CJ and those guys call up and say, what are you afraid of? I know what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that my marriage could be, dissolved. I'm worried that we the people, the regular working person out there, is being hurt by the billionaires. And then we're having a caste system where we're going to have the uber rich and we're going to have the uber poor. That's what I'm afraid of. And I'm not afraid of government, though, because I know we can vote them out. It's not that. I'm more afraid of the fact that the corporations have taken over everything, all the commercials, all the cars, all the stuff that they give away, and they can go and write it off on their taxes, and they don't pay taxes. I don't understand. That's why I would love to have a conversation with some of these guys, and I do, where we do agree about money and politics. But I would like to ask them, what is it that they're so afraid of? I mean, is it, if you hear CJ call up, all he's going to say is everything Joe Biden does is bad. So there's no even like getting past that. All he's going to, Joe Biden has the cure for cancer. Barack Obama has the cure for cancer. They're still going to say that they're a big government trying to take over. Crap. They did that with Michelle Obama in terms of healthy lunches for kids, for God's sakes. I mean, this is part of the issue for those really, really right-wingers. But there is another segment that is, they're fearful of something. And we need to find out what it is they're fearful. I've always said Barack Obama should have taken those people behind a glass case like the Pope, but should have had a conversation with these right-wingers and these Tea Partiers. Because let's find out, why is it that you're so afraid? Why is it so you're angry? Let's stop avoiding them. Let's bring them into the fold and say, why? What is it that you're
doing? Well, we do know at the root of it is that they're worried about not being a majority people.
That too. But the thing is, the main thing is they're like scared little boys. Like you said, they have to have their guns. They're so afraid. I am so happy to be a pro golfer.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. And I promise you, after Sandy responds to Tom from L.A., we'll move on. But I just think, Sandy, that we, because of the importance of what we've been focusing on, people really need to understand the seriousness of now, and that this is not just a conversation that is just between two geezers. This is a conversation that really needs to be talked about nationally, you know, with all the talking heads and all those kinds of things, and not from the perspective of I'm on this side, you're on that side.
Right.
Right. It's got to be had, and it's got to be had openly and honestly.
Well, I think there ought to be a much more complete discussion about this peaceful transfer of power. And the fact is that the peaceful transfer of power would require that the ex-president behave differently than the ex-president is currently behaving. So it isn't just what happened on January 6th. It's been a whole course
a continuation
of behavior, which is continuing. And, you know, I agree with what Tom had to say in almost all respects. And particularly, I think, with respect to the erosion in America of the respect for institutions generally. And I think that's a serious problem. We not only have the erosion of the respect in America for government, but for corporations, for the corporations people work for, you know, just institutions generally. The churches in America are under attack. About the only churches that are powerful in this country are the disorganized evangelist churches that are not per se institutions,
right,
but are each church sort of onto themselves. And that's sort of the core of the evangelist movement, I think. So, you know, we have a problem in America, and we've got to figure out a way to get our arms around it, because ultimately, respect for institutions and respect is the same as respect for law, because law is the way that institutions, the institution of government, implements itself.
You know, I wanted to move on, reluctantly move on, because I think there's still so much there to be had about the conversation we've had for the last hour and a half. But I will move on. And I wanted to talk about everything I'm reading about Afghanistan. And, you know, the conversation is that, well, Afghanistan, 1 year later, is a mess. You know, the legacy of the U.S. failure endures. Sandy, it sounds a lot like Vietnam. You know, here we are as American people and citizens, and we laud our military, and we laud our nation for what it does as we enter into nations, governments, and we decide and determine that we're going to turn this government around and make it the way we want it. We should have learned our lesson in Vietnam. We didn't. We turn around. We do the same thing in Afghanistan. And then we wonder, well, it didn't work. You know, 20 years We were there.
Well, I think there are so many different countries we could identify. And that, to me, the issue is, how does America decide where it sticks its nose in? And, you know, there's every kid is admonished when they're growing up, don't stick your nose in where it doesn't belong.
Right.
Right? And how do we decide where our nose belongs? And it turns out that the American foreign policy seems to stick its nose many, many places where it doesn't belong. And where it belongs has a lot to do with where what is really making a decision about what is fundamentally important to America, where America has actual cultural sway, and it has to do with this real politic concept of hegemony, real politic. And we keep sticking our nose in where we don't have any business sticking our nose in. I mean, you look at Afghanistan, you know, should we not have stuck our nose into Saudi Arabia? Their problems were just about as severe from the standpoint of, number one, connection to 9/11. Saudi Arabia,
right.
Lots of connections to 9/11, but we didn't decide to stick our nose there. And when we stick our nose where it doesn't belong, bad things happen. And my assertion is that our nose doesn't belong in Ukraine, didn't belong in Ukraine. Sticking our nose there probably caused a minor skin blemish to turn into a major boil, okay? And it could have been resolved differently and would have been resolved differently without the West's intrusion into what is outside their hegemony and outside their interest, this invitation to NATO. And now we're sticking our nose into a very, very difficult place, Taiwan, a place where we in 1979 signed a treaty that indicated that we would honor the one policy China, the one state policy for China, that meant that Formosa, Taiwan, was a part of China. And now, for our own internal political domestic machismo purposes, I guess, we find ourselves tampering with that, sticking our nose in a place where it's going to be a painful, painful problem for America if this turns into something like Ukraine.
You know, Sandy, again, going back to the faux pas in Vietnam, and at a time when the resources that were supposedly going to be used to level the playing field in America for people of color, then President
Johnson
had talked about mainstreaming people of color into America. Those resources were taken to be used for a war in Vietnam. Then you turn around and you watch what happened in Afghanistan, knowing the outcome historically of any nation that's going into Afghanistan, and to fight and waste that money, right? We couldn't do anything else because we wasted all of that money. And because at the root of all of these endeavors and involvements, you can trace back to money that was spent and wasted.
Well, even worse was that we spent deficit money because we decided, beginning in Vietnam, to stop funding wars with current taxes. And so, you know, we fought the Gulf War, we fought the Afghanistan war, not with increasing taxes to support the huge costs of
right.
war, but with decreasing taxes, which only increased the deficit manifold to try and support a strong economy in the United States, to muffle from ourselves the fact that we were actually involved in these very expensive endeavors. And not only that, but we were using the fact of the deficit to answer proponents for social safety net kinds of issues that would be for the American people. We continue to do that.
We continue
to point at the deficit as the reason that we can't have child daycare, we can't have general health care, we can't have all these things because it's too expensive. But we spend money like blind drunken sailors on defense and on our foreign adventures when we stick our nose where it doesn't
belong. You know, Sandy, and even worse than all of that, the loss of life.
Yeah.
The fact that these decisions that we make take away and maim young people for the rest of their lives, and we as the American people hear that this is done for us. Nobody, America's foreign policy does not include the American people.
Well, what's kind of crazy to me is the extent to which we not only spent treasure and lives in Afghanistan, and I've got people I talked to who were soldiers in Afghanistan whose lives have been impacted and in many ways emotionally destroyed by the experiences they had in Afghanistan. And if someone had said to them that it might cost 13 more military lives to get out of Afghanistan, they all would have voted for it, including the 13 people whose lives were taken.
Right.
Because, you know, they understood that being in Afghanistan was a dead end. We'd run into a cultural and a military and a political cul-de-sac that had no exit and had no end game. No one ever described what the end game for Afghanistan was. We were going to try and create a culture that would support a government. That had never happened in Afghanistan before, and it obviously hasn't happened now.
You know, Sandy, it's and the reason that I thought it was important that we have this discussion is because, as you stated before, all things are pointing in the direction that we're going to be embroiled in something, be it in Ukraine or heaven forbid, as you stated, in Taiwan, and then to have our elected officials just seeing what took place after Nancy Pelosi was there, and all of this money that was spent in showing a show of force to Taiwan and the United States, a message being sent, and our response by the congressmen and senators is, oh, Nancy opened the door for us, let's all go.
Well,
I mean, what is that?
It's this whole domestic politic machismo thing, without regard to the wisdom of a policy which is creating hostility and is provocative vis-a-vis China, because what we have is a situation in which China has asserted its one state policy ever since the 1949
that was agreed to
since the end of the civil war in China. It's been asserted by the people, by the communist government. We agreed to it in 1979. We understand, and everyone understands, that Taiwan is being treated by China in some special ways to allow it to have this sort of autonomous conduct, but that it is Chinese and it is China's, the only reason I think that China has become more strident about bringing Taiwan into the fold is that the United States has become more adventuresome about seeming to support the notion that Taiwan has the right to be independent from China. And it wasn't until 2019 that a government was elected in China that began to assert this independence. The Kuomintang, which was in power since till 1997, believed in a one-China policy as well. And what replaced them at that point was the first democratic government. The first democracy in Taiwan wasn't even elected until 1997. Until 2019, that elected government was never asserting the right of independence for Taiwan, okay? And so we should understand that the notion of an independent state for Taiwan is anathema to the treaty we signed in 1979, and it's anathema to China, and it's provocative to China for us to assert it, and it only creates a greater likelihood that China would flex its muscle to assert its domain over Taiwan if Taiwan is going to continue to beat the drum and assert that it's independent.
You know, Sandy, we can go back to North Korea and South Korea, and maybe part of what we are thinking about in this nation is, look at what we were able to do with South Korea. And so that maybe opened the door to this kind of thinking, right?
Yeah, but we didn't have a treaty in place with respect to South Korea. There was a violation of the and South Korea was not run by a pleasant organization,
right,
in 1951 or whenever the invasion occurred. But yeah, there's no analogy This is not an analogous circumstance. This is a totally different circumstance, and if we continue to play with it, we are going to provoke a serious problem, and we should understand that we are the provocateurs here.
We've been the provocateurs, Sandy, in a lot of different instances that the American people don't want to look at, but it's time we do start looking at it. At least we continue to repeat the problems that we've had in the past. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back. 844-967-2789 is the number. Sandy Williams, it's Mondays with Sandy Williams on the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be back.
Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. He's my co-host. And really, Sandy, great, great information, great conversation this morning. Let's go to Donald. Hey, Donald, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. I would like to add a little comment to your conversation about Afghanistan. That sure was a waste of money, and it seems like every time we get in one of those, it doesn't make any difference if it's Democrat or Republican. It gets worse. Like when Nixon was in Vietnam, when we were in Vietnam, Johnson is the one that he was in it. Well, then Nixon, he said he was going to end it. And it lasted another 7 years, and he made it worse. We started going into Laos and Cambodia, and it got really bad. And with this this Afghanistan, Bush is the one that got us into the damn thing. Okay, then Obama said, "Oh, we're going to get out of it," and we lasted another. We are 20 years, and it has been said that that's where empires go to die. Soviet Union was in there for 10 years.
How long was France in there?
No, England.
Oh, God, I don't know. England. They were, I don't know. Was France ever in there?
England. You're right.
Oh, England. I don't know. I didn't know they were ever there, but I suppose they were there, too. But the Soviet Union, year later, Soviet Union was dissolved.
Rudyard Kipling wrote famous poems about the charge of the Light Brigade, and one of those was all about Afghanistan and the battles there. England suffered terrible military losses in the mountains.
And they couldn't win either.
No, they couldn't win. And it, the lesson,
yeah, right.
The
military, so you would think we would learn by history that we can't win there.
Yeah. So, you're right, Donald. I think the problem, and I've talked about it before, is that our foreign policy for a long time was all by mutual agreement and maybe by dictate from the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower was so worried about, has been a bipartisan agreement that we will not criticize our foreign policies.
That's the way it seems, yeah.
Once implemented. And so that has led to a great deal of these long-term problems that we've engaged in.
Yeah, because the preceding administration would always promise us, we're gonna get out of there, like Nixon promised, and that's how he got in, and then he lasted another, 10 years?
Nixon was 68 to 73, so he had 5 years of
But the war actually expanded He made it worse. It expanded into Cambodia and into Laos. We weren't in there then at the time.
Yeah.
So he made it worse. Then Obama said, well, we're going to get out of there. And, well, Chuck, it lasted till Joe Biden got it.
It doesn't matter, Democrat or Republican. Yeah. That's what Sandy and I are talking about.
I know, right. It just so keeps, I mean, that's one thing, that really is aggravating,
Hey, Don, thank you very much for the call.
Yeah, waste of money.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Let's go to Dave from Mequon. Hey, Dave, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, Earl, Sandy. I just wanted to point out to Sandy, and I remember this because it was actually on my birthday, the Budapest Memorandum, which was signed by Great Britain, Russia, and the United States, and to a lesser extent, France, was an agreement to basically, for Ukraine, when it became a country after the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, they had the third largest stockpile of nuclear weapons in the world. People forget about that. And in turn, by giving up the nuclear weapons, it was basically promised that there would be security for Ukraine and all that other stuff. And in hindsight, 2020, maybe Ukraine should have secured something even a little bit stronger, but the point is that Russia did make this agreement at the time, back then, and Al Gore was the one who actually went over there to get this finalized in Budapest. And so I disagree
Wait. I think that agreement was an agreement that agreed that there would be a neutral and that the neutrality of Ukraine would be defended by the signatories, and there was an agreement there would be no invasion of Ukraine and that Ukraine would be kept safe regardless of the fact that it had given up all of its nuclear weapons, which incidentally were given up to Russia.
Correct.
Yeah, and the fact is that the neutrality part of that agreement was being violated at the time that all of the talk about putting NATO into it and installing Ukraine as a part of NATO was in many respects thumbing of the nose at the basis for the Budapest Agreement. So, we can say that Russia's invasion was a violation of the Budapest Agreement, but there was a lot of all the saber rattling that went on before that was a problem as well. So,
well, at the end of the day, though, Russia is the one that has decided, okay, you know what, we're just going to take over. And granted, I understand what you're saying, that there was some discussions about Ukraine getting into NATO, but they officially did not get into NATO. They're still not a part of NATO.
Well, no,
I would argue if they would have signed that, then I would agree with you that.
Well, here's the deal about NATO, though, and they probably weren't going to get into NATO because it would have taken only one NATO country to veto it, and there were number of countries that were likely to, but in November 14th of 2021, Biden signed the Strategic Charter Agreement. He didn't sign it. Blinken did, with Ukraine, in which the United States announced that it was its intention to welcome Ukraine into NATO. So we were at the very eve of the, and it was after that date that Putin made his move to surround Ukraine with troops and to otherwise try and force a negotiation that would promise the neutrality of Ukraine. Now, he wanted probably more than that, and it's pretty clear that he probably wanted to topple Zelensky from power. But look, it's complicated, and the United States does not have clean hands with respect to the conduct of international relations as it led up to the Ukraine invasion.
And again, at the same time, Sandy, you're talking about the threat of what NATO was attempting to do towards, arming and doing these kind of things.
I mean, Russia
on their border.
Well, we have to understand that Russia had a view of NATO that made it a threat because Russia was not invited into NATO, and NATO's purpose was to be a counter.
Hey, let's do this. Hey, Dave, why don't you call back after the break? We'll continue the conversation.
Okay.
All right. Got to go to a break. Sandy Williams is Mondays with Sandy Williams. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. My pillow never dries.
Georgia.